Accession number 4618, reel 3.
Mr. Douglas, reel 3.
I think my most interesting job there was first thing in the morning having a pile of yesterday's signals and having to sort out the GG, I think they're called, and XX messages and any other relevant messages I think that the CO ought to have. I then gave them to the adjutant and he went through them again.
Can you explain what GG and XX messages were?
A GG call was a radio call for ground forces, I think. If the army were bogged down by the WOGs, they send out a GG call and give a map reference where they wanted help, I think. An XX call was a call for aircraft to bomb. And if I remember right... Yes, XX call would give a map reference and 6th Squadron would go out and bomb that map reference where perhaps the army were bogged down because of fire from that position. I remember a chap in Jerusalem who got the MM. He was a signaller. They used to have a RAF signaller with most army units because I didn't think the army were any good at it, so perhaps they didn't have signallers then. Not in that area anyway. Well, what was his name? His father was a Leicester newspaper reporter. It's gone. I know he got the MM sending out this XX call and saved them all getting wiped out because they were heavily bogged down in Palestine sometime in 38. Can't think of his name.
Did you gain any impression whilst you were in Palestine as to whether this support which the RAF was giving to the army was effective or not?
Oh, yes. I think... I'm not really qualified to speak, but I did have quite a few army friends. But I would say, yes. It was appreciated by the army. But an army chap who was there would be better qualified to answer that question. But I gained the impression that what the RAF were doing was very well worthwhile.
You mentioned earlier about the precautions that were taken to defend the camp at Ramleh. Did any attacks on the base at Ramleh occur whilst you were there? Or had you heard of any occurring?
No. No, not on the camp itself, because it was pretty heavily guarded. I used to scrounge trips. In those days, we had station flight. Every station had a couple of aircraft, two or three aircraft, and it was called station flight. They were for the use of the CO, I suppose, and other bods for going about them. And there they had Fairy Gordons, you know, big biplanes. Nice things. And I used to scrounge trips on those, and I went a couple of times up to Jerusalem from Ramleh and landed at just a field on the outskirts of Jerusalem called Columbia, I think it was. They do say that, or they did say that any airmen who were shot down or forced landed were horribly treated by the WOGs. They used to cut their balls out and stick them in their mouth. Don't know whether you want to cut that out.
Do you think this was true?
From what army friends I met said, yes.
Did this happen in Palestine? I never saw it. Or other parts of the Middle East?
Only in Palestine that I heard.
What were the main differences to your actual day-to-day life being based at Ranelagh as opposed to Jerusalem?
Well, we couldn't go out of... Well, out of camp was nothing. It was just a few orange groves and Ranelagh village, but there was no shops, there was no nothing. All the entertainment was on camp. We had camp cinema, camp boxing, camp everything. Tennis courts and football. Plenty of activities to, keep you occupied. And, of course, there were trips to Jerusalem and trips to Jaffa.
Were these organised by the RAF?
Organised by the RAF. But you could go out at one stage. I think you could go out... I can't remember whether you could get a taxi down from Jaffa. I can't remember. I never went out because Ranelagh, I was there about March 39 and in July, I think, I was pushed out on the desert.
How do you mean?
Well, preparations were being made out on the desert then, It was in the July before war broke out here.
Whereabouts in the desert was this?
Alamein, past Alamein. Alamein was just a piece of wood alongside the railway those days. Next to Alamein was El Daba, D-A-B-A, and then was Fuka, F-U-K-A, and that's where we were based.
When you say a piece of wood by the railway, you mean a signpost?
Just to say the station, yes, where the train used to come up. A single-track train, railway, went from Alex right the way up to Mirza Matru. That's a beautiful spot.
Why is that?
Blue and green sea. Beautiful. Mirza, just a... I don't know what there is now. Probably a holiday resort. Mirza Matru. I once had a tooth taken out there with nothing.
Who by?
The Honourable some bloody thing. He was an army dentist. They said he was the Honourable... Oh, I don't know. He was an Honourable... He had a title. But he hadn't got anything. Hair. Well, I was in agony. And sand got in and, it was out here for a terrible infection.
Was this because of lack of facilities for the...
Oh, yes. You only went sick here. You only went with a toothache after that. He was a visiting army man. They said he was an honourable somebody, I don't know.
So...
But he hadn't got the drugs.
So you were... at this time, facing the Libyan border in case of possible Italian offensive.
Oh, yes. And I was... where did I go? No, I didn't go with 6th Squadron. 6th Squadron stayed in at Ranelagh. And I think they had Lysand, as I say. Army cooperating machines. I first went out to a unit called... they call them maintenance units now, I think. Air Stores Park, number one Air Stores Park on the desert at Fuka. And then, here shows you some of the confusion that went going on. And then after a good few months, an order came round changing our name from number one Air Stores Park to number 31 Air Stores Park, because they discovered that there was a number one Air Stores Park in France. With a beer. That was 1939-1940. And apparently my promotion to... I was an LAC then, I think, or a corporal. I don't know. An LAC. My promotion was held up because of this. From leading aircraftman to corporal. It had gone to number one ASB, Air Stores Park, in France. And it arrived 12 months late. And I got about 80 quid back pay, I think. Something like that. I don't know, I can't remember very well.
What was the procedure for getting promotion from LAC to corporal? Did you have exams?
No, it went on time then. That depended on records here at home. Oh, now I remember back. I ought to know all these pieces of paper. Every year, I wonder if it still happens, every year the CO has to give... A character reference, which goes on your documents. Form 280, I forget. A character reference, which can only be very good, good or bad or indifferent. I forget. There's words given, you know. And he also has to give a trade test, which begins with excellent. You can't be better than excellent. Then the next, I think, was superior. Then satisfactory, then indifferent or something like that. Every year, these assessments have to be done on every person in the RAF. And it goes on your documents. Whether that had something to do with your subsequent promotion, I don't know. It's the same with officers. In a way.
What did you and your friends in the RAF think about these promotion procedures? Did you feel that they were fair?
Can't think, Mick. Oh, sometimes there would be some blatant cause for moaning, but you could do nothing about it. You know, think sometimes, well, so-and-so in the stores, he's been an LAC for donkey's years. Nothing wrong with him, he's a good chap. No.
So there was no procedure for complaints?
I don't think so, no. Never knew anything about it. I never knew anything about it, no. I suppose you could ask, what is it? Sir, I have the honour to request an interview with blah, 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 all this bull, you know. I suppose you could have asked for a personal interview with your CO. I don't know.
Would anybody have dreamt of doing so?
They would today. I would say today, certainly, yes.
But then?
No, discipline was... I don't think those things were done then.
Coming back to your time at Fuka in the Western Desert, can you describe in more detail the conditions under which you were living then?
Yeah, we had bell tents. We named them all. Ours was called Windsor Castle. There was eight of us in it. We had as an LAC, we had a little corporal. He was in charge of the WOGs. Oh, we should have brought some photographs in. He was a smashing chap.
What do you mean he was in charge of the WOGs?
He was in charge of the natives. They have... natives wandering on the desert were recruited and paid 10 pence a day or, you know...
To do what?
Build roads, empty the latrines, and all the menial tasks, you know. The toilets out there was one big hole, you know. Don't you know how OACs came into being? No, the toilets, they used to go, and the WOG used to, I forget his name, he was a nice chap. He'd swear at them in Arabic, and he'd get this gang of WOGs, and they'd go and dig a bloody great big hole, you know, 20 foot wide and about 15 foot deep, in which all the residue was tipped, you know, every day, because, you know, the heat out there flies everywhere. And we had the thunderboxes, you've heard of thunderboxes. It was said that you could recognise your friend by the noise he made in the thunderbox. You know, oh, that's old Sam over there, you know. Fuka, yes, it was just a spot on the sand, a bit of scrub, each side of the railway, the single-track railway line. And later on, we had a pilot, this little Australian chap, nice chap. And they had two big Besno hangers, canvas hangers, eventually.
Which hangers?
Besno.
How do you spell it?
Oh dear, it's a German word. Is it B-E-S-S? It ends in a T. Besno. I should have to look it up. We made one of them in the beginning because there wasn't enough work. Rolled it and made it into a indoor tennis whilst we were waiting. But then eventually, when the ITIs... used to come and bomb us from 30,000 feet. they brought in crashed aircraft, an aircraft for repair and engine changes, and they were repaired at the unit I was on. I was still doing clerical duties.
What was the food like at Fuka?
Well, I remember once we had very little of it in the beginning. We had McConaughey's biscuits, you know, First World War biscuits. Bloody great big hard biscuits. Bags of protein in them, but that hard, you couldn't break them with a sledgehammer. Couldn't, literally. Used to soak them for 3 days and then bash them. And then mix them with these 7-pound tins of jam and all sorts, you know.
You used to have to soak them for 3 days?
Well, yes, easily. And the sand, when you were in a sandstorm, the sand everywhere. You know, gets everywhere, up your nose, in your food. But when you're hungry, you'll eat anything. And we did have a bit of bully. It was pretty rough.
What was morale like?
Very high. Because we knew we got the eye ties against us. Gutless, as they still are. Oh, you better scrub that out. You got any Italian friends? No.
Did you actually see anything of the Italians?
Oh, from a great height. Well, we saw them up there. Oh, yeah.
Even before the war broke out?
Italians before the war? No. No. The story's told that we had chippies, carpenters, building dummy aircraft up in the forward areas. I never saw them. I wasn't up that far. And that one day Jerry came across and dropped a wooden bomb on. Well, it's true, I don't know.
This was after the war started?
Oh, yes, after the war started, yes. But we had nothing.
Did you really?
Gladiators. I think we had three or four gladiators. That's all. And these Vicus Valencias, and I forget the other one, big things that, in the end, when they bombed Tripoli, I think it was 14 squadron came over from Amman to Heliopolis. I'm not sure. Might have been 7. And they were throwing, so they said, they were throwing bombs over the side at over Tripoli. Yeah, we were starved out there. It's surprising. Put it this way, from hindsight, had Jerry taken the place of the Itais in the beginning, we should have gone. The canal would have gone very quickly. Jerry's determination, as opposed to the Itais, you know.
You said that you were ill-equipped in the Western Desert before the war broke out, but did you know at the time that you were ill-equipped?
No.
Or were you living in a fool's paradise?
No, because eventually we did get trickles out at Fuka, where I was in the beginning, with this repair unit that it became. They did about half a mile across on the sand. They brought a Millennium Squadron out. It came out from Blighty. This was at the time when Churchill would begin to let things come out then. And I found out later on when I was at when I came back home that they were flying out from Portreath in Cornwall at night time, so that Jerry couldn't get them over the bay, and doing a quick landing at Jib, and then over to Alex, to where we were. I also heard too that they were shipping Spitz out to the west coast, to the Gold Coast, assembling them there, and ferry chaps were flying them across Africa. Do you hear that? I think it's in the history books, right? Yes, but I never knew anyone who did it.
You mentioned the Arabs who were doing labouring for you in the Western Desert.
Oh, yes. Yes.
What did you think to them as workmen?
Well, I'm naughty. We look down on them, as no doubt the Arab sheikhs look down on us now. I think perhaps it's a good thing that the thing should go full circle. In Palestine, the Arabs cleaned my shoes, made my mugs of tea, did my dobying, and I was only an ordinary airman. They waited on us. Wouldn't do it now, would they?
But did you think that they did their work well?
It was part of the system. Oh yes, it was part of the system. You mean, did I behave as a, in a Christian manner then? I don't think I did. And I lived in Jerusalem for a year and a half.
What do you mean you didn't live in a Christian manner?
Well, I should have, you know, why should I want a coloured chap to clean my shoes, you know? Now, the benefit of hindsight. The system.
Were these Arab servants reliable and trustworthy?
Oh, yes, because they were paid. They were paid.
Were the Arabs who were the servants in Palestine actual Palestinian Arabs, or did you have any Arabs from elsewhere working as servants?
No, as far as I remember, they were all local Arabs. They were all locals. They were all Palestinian Arabs.
Did you and your comrades draw a distinction between the Palestinian Arab and the Egyptian, or did you regard them just the same?
No, they were all worthy Oriental gentlemen.